Blog Talk Radio.
I'm going to introduce you to our listeners.
Okay.
In the last 10 years, you've done multiple independently researched reincarnation cases. You've researched over 100 cases, and you've written, two books on reincarnation?
Yes, I actually just have a third coming out.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So what got you started in reincarnation?
Well, I was going through my medical training. This was back in Chicago in 1984. And I went to a medium at a time when I actually didn't believe in psychics or mediums. I thought that was all sort of a scam. But a friend of mine had gone to this medium, had a great experience, and said I should go. And I only went because I didn't have much else to do. It was winter in Chicago. And in the session, when the trance medium goes into a meditative state, a different spirit entity enters the person's body, basically, to allow the spirit entity, the spirit guide, to talk to human beings. And in the beginning, they told me about issues, personal issues I had with my father, which was very impressive. I thought, how could they know something that personal? And then during the session, they told me about two past lifetimes, one in the American Revolution. And they told me that I had signed my name on parchment to help secure ideals for humanity. And then the session went on, and I asked, well, am I going to find a woman? And all these, you know, more mundane questions. But at the end, I asked, what can I know who I was in the revolution? And they told me that I was John Adams. And if I researched John Adams, I would see myself in personality traits and physical attributes. And I thought they meant that I knew John Adams. And if I researched Adams, I'd see myself in that circle. But they said, no, you were John Adams. And I found it, I didn't believe it. I thought it was ridiculous. And I heard that psychics always tell you you're somebody famous. And so I discarded it and didn't do anything about it for 12 years. At the end of 1995, I was working, coincidentally, for an oil company called Unocal 76. I was working as a medical director, and their slogan happens to be the spirit of 1776. Anyway, I was in Honolulu, and out of nowhere, I got a command, basically, internally. It was like a megaphone was in my head, and somebody said very firmly, study the lifetime of Adams. And nothing like that ever happened to me before, and nothing like that has ever happened since. But it got my attention, and it made me go to the bookstore that day, and I started to read about books on John Adams and the American Revolution. And I found, to my surprise, that in some portraits, I look exactly like him, and I noticed that personality traits and habits and so forth were the same. And so over a period of years, I started to identify people who appeared to be in John Adams' life who seemed to be reincarnated in my lifetime. For instance, I went to Massachusetts to do more research and found a little shoebox in the Quincy Historical Society, and there was and it said Peter Adams, brother of John Adams, and I had never seen a portrait of Peter Adams before because he's mentioned as a brother of John Adams, but he didn't really do anything in the Revolution and he's not written about much, and I realized he looks exactly like my brother George. And so over time, it appeared that people came back in groups, and I had this whole hypothesis that people tended to look the same and had similar personality traits, and people came back in karmic groups. But I was still afraid to come out. I thought to myself, well, if this is how it really works, this could be valuable information. But I was afraid to ever come out in public about it because, one, I wasn't entirely sure if it was true, and two, I work as a doctor. I'm not independently wealthy, and I need to work, and I didn't want people to perceive that you know I gone crazy or something. So what I had done is I started to research more about reincarnation, and over the years found many other cases, independently researched cases, that show the same phenomenon, that we have the same facial features from lifetime to lifetime, same personality traits, passions, and so forth. And one of the most important researchers is Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia, and he's even published two cases that show the same phenomenon, that people look the same from lifetime to lifetime.
Does that mean the male or female as well?
You can change gender, but Ian Stevenson has researched, accumulated a database of about 2,500 cases. And what he did is he was a professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine and the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry, and he got an endowment 40 years ago to study children who spontaneously remember past lives. He had heard about these cases, and he had a sympathetic funder who gave the university $1 million, and it allowed him to do this research over a period of 40 years. He's published many books that were published by the University of Virginia. If you all pile them up, they'd be a foot tall of all these cases he's researched all over the world. And they're extremely compelling, where a child, as soon as they speak, start talking to their parents about a past lifetime, and they say to the parents, you know, you're not my parents. My parents are named so-and-so, and my name is so-and-so, and this is not my village. My village is over there. And the child gives enough information to the biologic parents that the child can be reunited with the past life family, and then the child can identify past life family members by name and know all sorts of intimate details about that family that they couldn't know unless they were part of the family. And the child typically is accepted as the reincarnation of the deceased loved one.
Now,
so
how does the family?
Answer your question. In his database of about 2,500 cases, gender changes only about 10% of the time. And I similar at this point, I think we have a large database of cases also. And also most of the time people come back in the same gender, though it can change. And it appears that we all have our own sort of, well, I call it an energy spectrum, a set of energies that seems to be consistent from lifetime to lifetime, which is the basis of personality, really. And for souls that are sort of natural, nurturing, mothering type people, they prefer simply female incarnations because it fits their own energy pattern better, whereas people who tend to be more aggressive tend to like male incarnations because, again, it just fits their energy pattern better.
Wow. What about the families? Are they real accepting about this when they find this out, or how does that scenario go?
Well, let me just tell one specific case, and it's a case that's very important because it shows how facial features are observed to remain the same from lifetime to lifetime. This involves a woman named Susan Ghanem, and she was born about 30 years ago, and she was a little girl who had spontaneous memories of being a woman named Hanan Mansour in Lebanon. The story goes that Hanan was born in the 30s, she had a normal life, married a police officer from a well-to-do family. After their third child, she developed heart problems and had to have open-heart surgery. They couldn't do it in Lebanon, so she went to the University of Virginia, where her brother was living in Charlottesville. And the day before surgery, she tried repeatedly to get through to her family back in Lebanon, and in particular she was trying to speak to her daughter, whose name was Layla, but despite repeated attempts she wasn't able to get through. She told her brother, if anything happens to me, divide my jewelry among my daughters. She had the surgery. The next day she died. 10 days later, Suzanne Ghanem was born. And as soon as she, when she was like 2 years old or so, she wrote a number on a piece of paper. And this was even before she formally learned to write. And the number was the phone number of the Mansour family with only one number transposed. She kept pulling the phone off the hook and kept saying, Layla, Layla. And her biologic parents said, who's Layla? What are you doing? And she said, little Suzanne said, ask me later when my head is bigger. I actually said, Layla was my daughter. And they said, what are you talking about? And she said, ask me later when my head is bigger. And about a year, within a year, she retrieved more memories and was able to describe by name 13 family members, where she had lived. And she had given the biologic family enough information that she could be reunited with the past life family, the Mansour family, who at first were very skeptical. They thought this was maybe some kind of ruse or something. But little Suzanne was able to identify all the family members by name, about a dozen of them, and she knew about the dividing the jewelry among the daughters that Hannon had told her brother. And then her husband now is, you know, 40-some years old, and he's a police officer. He came to believe that this little girl is the reincarnation of his deceased wife because he could show her pictures of them at social events, him with Hannon in social events, and little Suzanne could identify their friends in the picture by name. And they thought, how else could she know all this, other than if she was the reincarnation of Hannon? So typically, and that she was accepted as the reincarnation of Hannon. The really key thing is that Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia first studied this case, first interviewed Suzanne when she was 3 or 4 years old, something like 30 years ago, when she was a child. In 1998, Stevenson was having a reporter travel with him to observe how he works. This reporter from the Washington Post, Tom Schroeder, was writing a book about Stevenson. And they went to research new cases in Lebanon, but they also went back to revisit a couple of cases that Stevenson had studied before. And they visited Suzanne Ghanem. And now Suzanne Ghanem is a full-grown adult, looks exactly like Hannon Mansour. And Stevenson visited another person who he had studied 25 or 30 years ago, whose name was Daniel Jurdy. And revisiting him in 1998, when Daniel Jurdy was a full-grown adult, Daniel there's a picture of Daniel holding a picture of who he was before. His name was Rashid Kadage. And he had a very similar story to Suzanne's spontaneous memories in childhood, where he was able to direct his biologic parents to find the past life family. He was also accepted by the past life family as the reincarnation of their deceased son. And Daniel Jurdy also looks exactly like Rashid Kadage. So, and if people would like to see this, it's featured on my website, which is www.johnadams.net. And if you click on the link that says Past Lives of Neil Donald Walsh and Other Cases Solved by Kevin Ryerson, you will see those two cases featured with the pictures, and it's just amazing.
Now, you said Suzanne was born just a few days after. Is this a normal time, or is that really soon?
Well, that's probably the soonest that of the cases that I know of, but Daniel Jurdy case, he reincarnated after only 1 year, and in many of the reincarnation cases, people do reincarnate after a relatively short period of time, you know, within a matter of years, and this has very significant implications. it appears that we reincarnate frequently, almost continuously, and it implies that all the historical figures that we can think of, you know, we think of them sort of locked in time, that they've had one incarnation and they're gone. But what this research implies is that people have been reincarnating all along. You know, every historic figure you can think of has been reincarnating all along, and we just didn't know of a way on how to identify them. So, you know, these sorts of cases, in my own story, I was very skeptical about being John Adams, and I can tell you later what eventually made me accept it, but the implication is that people like John Adams and Jefferson and Washington and Napoleon and all these people really have been incarnating all along, and odds are at this point in time, you know, many historical people are incarnate, you know, at this time.
Perhaps that's why people take such a stance in what they're doing. In case you didn't get our guest's name, his name is Walter Senku, and he has a sizzling information on reincarnation. So
he's written two books, mm-hmm. and actually he said there's a third one on its way.
Oh, good.
So the first book, was that Born Again?
The first book is Return of the Revolutionaries, which was published in the United States by Hampton Roads, and that kind of tells my story of how I found out about the Adams lifetime, and in Return of the Revolutionaries, and in the second book, Born Again, which was published in India but is available in the U.S. In the first part of the book, the first third of the books or so, is independently researched cases, cases that don't really have anything to do with me other than I compiled them, and including the two cases from Ian Stevenson, which I just described. And there are many other cases involving very reputable people, such as Norm Shealy, a famous neurosurgeon who found out who he was spontaneously, Robert Snow, who's a retired police captain from Indianapolis, who was in charge of homicide and organized crime, you know, very down-to-earth person, who unexpectedly learned about a past lifetime and wrote a book about it. Another person, Jeff Keane, a retired assistant fire chief of Westport, Connecticut, who again accidentally found out about a past lifetime, has written a book about it. In all these cases, people have been able to research their past lives, and they look the same. They have the same facial features, often the same personality traits. So the real strength of this research is that it's coming from multiple independently researched cases. So those are featured in both the Born Again book and then Return of the Revolutionaries. Return of the Revolutionaries features many cases from the American Revolution and who they are in contemporary times. And for instance, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Ralph Nader, Al Gore, they were all part of the American Revolution, and they're identified with pictures in the book. Born Again was written for more of an international audience, and one of the most important cases there is the reincarnation of Anne Frank. And this is another independently researched case, which is it okay if I go ahead and describe it a little bit?
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, this is one of the closest cases to my heart because it has such vast implications for society. Barbara Carlin her case is basically an Ian Stevenson type case, though there was nobody around when she was a child to research her like a Dr. Ian Stevenson. And her story is that she was born in 1954 in Sweden in a Christian family. And as soon as she could speak, at 2 or 3 years of age, she told her parents, "My name's not Barbara, it's Anna Frank. And you're not my parents, and this is not where I live, and my real parents are going to come and pick me up soon." And that's typically what children say in the Stevenson cases, like the Daniel Jurdy and the Suzanne Ghanem cases. And her parents were shocked. Again, they were Christian. They didn't know what she was talking about. They had never heard of Anne Frank or Anne Frank because the diary of Anne Frank had not yet been published in Swedish. So they had no knowledge of who this person could be. And Barbro had detailed memories of the entire lifetime. She remembered the concentration camp, remembered the attic, remembered all the details of her life. And she talked about this, and her parents thought she was making this all up. Things changed when she was about 10. By then, the diary of Anne Frank was out in Swedish. Her parents knew who Anne Frank was, and they went on a tour of cities in Europe, including Amsterdam, which is where the Anne Frank house is located. Barbara's father wanted to go to the Anne Frank house, the museum, and he picked up a phone at the hotel to get a cab to take them there. And Barbro, who's only 10 years old, says, "We don't need a cab. It's right near here." And her parents said, How could you know? You've never been here." And Barbro says, "Well, I don't know, but I know exactly where I am, and I'll show you. I'll lead you to it." And she led her parents on a 10-minute walk through Amsterdam directly to the Anne Frank house. And her parents were shocked. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I've been to Amsterdam, and all the buildings look the same. They're all like 5 stories tall, and the canals are winding, and I got lost jogging. I mean, I couldn't find my way back to my hotel. It was so confusing. But she found her way straight to the Anne Frank house. When she was in the room where Anne Frank had lived, she pointed at the wall and said, "Look, Mommy, the pictures of the movie stars are still on the wall." Her mother looked at the wall and saw there was nothing there and said, "Barbro, there's nothing on the wall." And Barbro looked and realized, indeed, there was nothing there, and she started to cry. She got confused. And her mother said, "Well, let's ask the tour guide." And the tour guide said, "Yes, normally pictures of movie stars that Anne Frank had clipped are on that wall, but we took them down be mounted behind glass because people were touching them and damaging them." And at that point, her parents realized for the first time that what she was saying about being Anne Frank was real. You know, she knew how to get there without ever being there before, knew where these pictures were supposed to be. And it was the first time that her parents believed her. And her mom became a strong supporter of her. Her father, though, was upset about the whole thing. And she says in an interview that her father was actually upset because Barbro Pitt proved him wrong, you know, that this was really true. And he said to her, "Well, you may have reincarnated, but you're the only one." And Barbro says that he was upset because this was kind of throwing out of kilter his whole Christian mindset, where you have one life and then go to heaven. So the other important thing is that Barbro Carlin was a childhood writing prodigy, just like Anne Frank. I'd like to make the point that Anne Frank has not become the symbol of the Holocaust because she's the only one who died. She's the symbol of the Holocaust because she wrote this diary that's extremely readable, that talks about universal themes like good and evil that people related to. And in the same way, and she was just writing for herself, you know, the diary was published after she was gone. In the same way, Barbro Carlin started to write for herself in childhood, and somebody, a family member, saw this and said, "Boy, this is really good, this should be published." And sure enough, they took the papers, and it was published and became the best-selling poetry prose book in Swedish history. And at age 12, 13, she became a little celebrity being interviewed on television. So she demonstrated the same talents as Anne Frank, which is what we see in many cases. And as a note, you know, this is how to explain child prodigies. These souls bring this information through. It appears that the soul projects a hologram in the developing fetus, which serves as an energy template, which shapes the body, and in particular the face. And it appears that the soul also can download information so that a child can bring talent through from a prior lifetime, which again explains child prodigies. And Barbara Carlin really was a child prodigy, having a best-selling book published when she was 12. Barbara didn't, her memories faded when she was about 15 or so, which was actually a big relief to her, because now she could live a normal life. You know, at the time, before that time, she was having memories from the past lifetime, plus trying to live her own lifetime, and she had nobody to talk to about this. I mean, now we're getting the word out about reincarnation, but back then, can you imagine how hard it must have been for a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old who has nobody around them who can understand what's going on?
Well, normally people don't remember that long, do they?
Right. And Barbara eventually, she was glad that her memories had receded, because now she could have a normal life, basically. But later the memories resurfaced in adulthood, and she finally wrote a book about this in 1996. And it's called And the Wolves Howled. And I heard about her and met her in 2000. And my reaction, I'm always skeptical when people think they're somebody famous, because usually they're not. Usually they may have had an association with the famous person, may have known them, may have just lived in that same era. But usually when people think they're somebody famous, it's usually not correct. And so I was skeptical in the beginning, but I met Barbara, spoke to her, and realized that, oh, my God, I think she's real. And then I compared the pictures, because I had been working since 1996 on my own case and observing how facial features seem to be consistent. And then remember Ian Stevenson researched two cases, the Daniel Jurdy and Suzanne Ghanem cases, that show the same phenomenon. People look the same. And I paired Barbara's pictures with Anne Frank's, and it's the same face. And that is also on my website. People can look at it. And I like to point out there's a series of three pictures, one when Barbara was 7, Anne Frank in her teenage years, and Barbara as an adult. And it looks like the same person in three phases of life, but it's actually one soul in two different lifetimes.
Now, do you think we are reincarnated to continue our soul purpose? Is that the reason why we...
Yeah, I think it's a combination. One, it's our own growth. You know, the new book that I talked about, it's called Origin of the Soul and Purpose of Reincarnation, is more addressed at the big picture. Born Again and Return of the Revolutionaries is more presenting cases that demonstrate evidence of reincarnation. The Origin of the Soul and Purpose of Reincarnation book is more for this, the big picture questions. And so one purpose of incarnation is simply to develop an identity. And I use the analogy, think of your own life going all the way back to childhood. You are who you are because of your experiences and your memories. What if you had no memories? Who would you be? And that's how it is if you're a new soul and have never incarnated, and you may be close to God and kind of in a blissful state, but you have no experience, you have no memories, you have no separate identity. So one of the very basic reasons for incarnation is to develop an identity. And as I mentioned, all of us are born with a particular set of energies, an energy spectrum, like I said. So you know, people who like to be leaders tend to come back and seek leadership positions. People who love art and love doing paintings tend to come back to do art in some way, though they can vary the medium and what they do exactly. And so we tend to come back and do similar sorts of things. But as we incarnate, you know, we make mistakes, we hurt people, we develop negative karma as well as good karma, and it seems like what a rule of thumb is you have to go back to the plane where you incurred the karma to work it off before you can proceed on your own spiritual journey. And so you have to keep coming back until, one, you develop your own personal talents and gifts to a sufficient degree. You've established a solid identity, and after you've worked off any karma that you have generated along the way. And then people, you know, even after you've done that, people can also come back, even if they don't have to help humanity. So they may have compassion, you know, for people they still know on Earth, and even though they may not have to come back, people come back to do service and try to help humanity out. And I guess at this point I probably should talk about Kevin Ryerson to explain how I know these things or why I say these things. Is it okay if I sort of segue into that?
Sure. Most people know who he is, but if you want to give a little background on him in case somebody doesn't know.
Okay. So let me just explain how I met Kevin and how our work has progressed. You recall that I was working on this hypothesis that I might be the reincarnation of John Adams, and I had all these cases where I had hypotheses of who was who. So I had about 60 people identified from the Adams lifetime who I think I knew who they were in contemporary times. But I wasn't sure, and I was looking for a way to validate these cases. I didn't know what to do, and again, I didn't want to go out in public and unless I was really sure, you know, because I didn't want to think people I was John Adams if I'm not, and I certainly didn't want to embarrass myself and compromise my career. So I went to a whole series of psychics trying to find out, you know, a way to validate cases, and I would just tell them exactly what happened to me, and they would say, yes, you were John Adams. But then I would go away thinking, well, how do I know they're right? And I would ask them about other matches, and I never found anybody who was able to make what appeared to me to be accurate past life matches. And then I ran into Kevin, and he channels a spirit being named Atun Ray, an Egyptian who had an Egyptian past lifetime about 3,000 years ago, and that was his last incarnation. And I went through my list of 60 people, and he told me which ones were right and which ones were wrong. I was about 85% right, 15% wrong. But then I still thought, well, how do I know to trust him? And the breakthrough really came when I started to ask about matches where I had no hypothesis. And a very good example is the Ralph Nader case. I had, on my own, derived or hypothesized that several people in the 2000 election, including Clinton, Gore, Bush, were part of the American Revolution. And Atun Ray confirmed that I was right. You know, George W. Bush was this general in the Revolution, which is why he's got this military mindset. And Ralph Nader was in that 2000 election, but I couldn't figure out who he might have been in the Revolution. So I asked Atun Ray, was Nader in the Revolution, and if so, who was he? And Atun Ray said, yes, he was in the Revolution. He was a major player in the Continental Congress. If you find a portrait of him, he'll have the same angular facial features. And then I asked the name, and this is what most psychics can't get. And he said the name is Thompson. Well, I had never heard of a Thompson, and by now I had a whole library on the American Revolution, and he was in none of my books. This was before Google. There were some primitive search engines back then, but this was, again, 2001, but Google really hadn't taken off, and you had to actually research by going through books. So I had to actually go to the San Francisco Library, and I went through about 200 books, and finally, in a book that written back in 1930, in the index I found Thompson, Charles Thompson, Portrait of Charles Thompson. And I found that he's a dead ringer for Ralph Nader. Then I read about Thompson more and got books about him, and it turned out that he has the same exact personality. And in Return of the Revolutionaries, I take direct quotes Thompson made, I mean written statements that Thompson made, with written statements that Nader has made, and I compare them one to the other, showing it's the same thought. It's the same. They're the same person. They were both people who fought for the underdogs. They both champion Native American rights. I mean, it's uncanny. And you might ask, and it turned out that Thompson was the secretary of the Continental Congress for the full 13 years of its existence. Well, if he was so intimately involved with the Congress, why wasn't he a representative himself? And the answer is he was considered too radical to be elected, much like Nader is now. So that, and there were many other cases like that, and these are on the website, which is johnadams.net, and another case which is also featured on the website is the case involving Carl Sagan. And just real briefly, I had read about this revolutionary named David Rittenhouse, that he had helped edit the pamphlet Common Sense, and that's all I knew about him. And I asked Atun Ray, has Rittenhouse reincarnated in contemporary times? And he said yes, he had come back as Carl Sagan. And when I first heard that, my heart actually sank, because I thought, that can't be true. You know, because I, by this time I had observed that people tend to come back with similar talents and interests. And I thought, why would a little-known political revolutionary come back as a world-famous astronomer? And I thought he must be wrong, and I was on a dead end. But then I read more about Rittenhouse, and it turned out that he was America's first astronomer. He built the first telescope in America, built a replica of the solar system that was accurate, built the first planetarium. And the first time I saw a portrait of him, I couldn't find one initially, but I went to visit Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia on a side tourist visit, went to see James Madison's home, and he had a portrait of Rittenhouse. And it was the first time I saw the image of Rittenhouse, and I realized, my God, he looks just like Carl Sagan. And Neil Donald Walsh is another case like that, where Atun Ray was able to identify somebody who was very obscure, unknown. We were able to find the portrait and information. Everything matched. And even Neil Donald Walsh agreed to be in my books. So I realized I had a resource who could indeed make accurate past life matches. And that's what actually gave me confidence to come out in public. You know, I reasoned, well, if he can make these matches involving very obscure people, then I can rely on Atun Ray. And Atun Ray said, yes, I am the reincarnation of John Adams, so that kind of gave me the confidence to go ahead and get the book published and come out in public.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about the DNA links that you're working with that connects all of this?
Yeah, let me just preface this with saying the reason that I'm especially passionate about this is the social change that all this can bring. Remember, I mentioned the evidence. The research is strong because it's coming from many different people. Remember the Anne Frank case where Barbara Carlin went from being a Jewish person to being Christian. You know, I point out if 70 years ago the German people knew you could be born Jewish in one life and Christian in another, there never could have been a Holocaust. If people now knew you could be Jewish in one lifetime and Muslim or Palestinian in another, or Shiite in one lifetime and Sunni in another, then all this conflict that's based on these artificial differences would go away.
Mm-hmm.
And for many people like me, you know, I'm very familiar with the research, and to me, you know, it's enough for me to conclude reincarnation is real. We are now identifying the patterns of how it works. But there are going to be some very skeptical, close-minded people, and you're going to need something more. So we are looking towards the possibility that we may be able to more definitively prove reincarnation through biochemical studies like DNA analysis. again, we're noticing that facial features remain consistent. And the question is, well, how does that happen? You know, it may be an energy template that the soul provides, but it may be also that the soul programs certain portions of the DNA so that you end up having similar facial features, personality traits, and so forth. So we're looking at the possibility of using DNA in the future, at least to compare people from incarnations to incarnations, to assess whether there's unique sequencing that the soul provides.
Have you done this at all, or are you?
It hasn't been done yet. You know, I mean, first you have to throw out the idea, and we have to get funding. The thing though that's hopeful is, we also have identified a phenomenon which I call split incarnation, where one soul can inhabit more than one body at a time.
I was going to ask that question, if that's possible.
Yeah, and in fact, remember the very first case that I talked about, the Suzanne Ghanem case?
Mm-hmm.
Recall, and that was researched by Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia, and that's the case where he revisited her 30 years after the initial interviews, and as a full-grown adult, she looks exactly like who she was before. Suzanne Ghanem was born just 10 days after Hannon Mansour had died. So if you think about it, that means that the soul of Suzanne Ghanem was incarnate in the fetus of Suzanne at the same time that it was incarnate in Hannon, who was in the process of going to Virginia and getting her heart surgery. So that case in itself represents a case where the soul is involved in two incarnations simultaneously. In the Return of the Revolutionaries and Born Again books, we have another case that's extremely compelling that demonstrates split incarnation, and those are the cases involving Penny Pierce, where we have a three-life sequence of lives for Penny where two of her prior lifetimes intersected or overlap by 30 years. And we have the pictures and facial features. We even have pictures showing how her sister in a prior lifetime is reincarnated as her sister in this lifetime. They look the same. And it's a very, very compelling case demonstrating split incarnation. And we have a number of split incarnation cases identified now where we have two people who we believe are derived from the same soul. So doing the research is going to be much more feasible that way than trying to get DNA from people who have already died and are entombed somewhere.
So are there two people that know this at this time?
Yeah, and people who work with us and who are cooperative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the DNA studies that are used, say, for DNA fingerprinting for criminal cases, that will not work. What we're really looking at is looking at DNA sequencing, especially for areas in your genome involving facial features and personality traits and so forth. I mean, there's definitely a part of your genetics that's inherited from your family. But what we're looking at is the possibility that the soul changes or programs certain parts of the DNA in a unique way. So we would be looking at the sequencing from one person to another, and the technology is just now becoming feasible. And in fact, we have a MD geneticist who's helping us in analyzing how this could be done. And in the future, DNA sequencing is supposed to be able to be available for $1,000 or so. So it would be in the realm of possibility, where up until now, the technology just hasn't been there.
Before you leave the air, I'd like to know your second book, The Return of the Revolutionaries. In there, you speak about, like you talked about Bill Clinton and the people that are the group you talk about reuniting again. How did you find out that Bill Clinton had returned, and who was he then, you know, in life?
Well, the way this happened is, I had been researching the American Revolution quite intensely, and somebody had told me that I should look into a fellow named John Hagelin, who also ran for president in 2000 under the Natural Law Party. He was involved with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who just died recently. And I had never heard of John Hagelin, but they said people like Deepak Chopra were supporting him, and Marianne Williamson, and he's real spiritual. And the first time, and I saw him on TV maybe a couple days later, and I instantly recognized his face. He was James Otis from the American Revolution, who was in Boston, who was a friend of John and Abigail Adams. And I thought to myself, well, if Hagelin was in the American Revolution, perhaps other of the people in the presidential race, like Clinton and Gore and Bush, were there too. And it was a case where I actually got an intuition, and some of the cases were solved where I got information on an intuitive basis. And when I was thinking about Bill Clinton, well, first I was thinking about Bush, and I had this intuition. Look in your book on Washington's generals, and I knew exactly which book this intuition or telepathic message was referring to, and I picked up the book, and sure enough, I found who I believed was the reincarnation of Bush, and same thing for Gore. The intuition said Gore would be in that book too. When I thought about Clinton, I got the intuition, look into the Randolph family, and which surprised me, but the Randolph family is Thomas Jefferson's family on his mother's side, and I did some research, and I found somebody who looked just like Bill Clinton and seemed to have the same personality. And this was, again, before I had met Kevin Ryerson, and this was part of my list of 60 people who I thought I had identified in Revolutionary Times. But when I did start working with Kevin, Atun Ray, the spirit guide, who's demonstrated this ability to make accurate matches, he validated those matches.
Now, a lot of people say Obama reminds them of Lincoln, but
yeah.
On your website.
That's a very popular notion, and it's been going around the Internet. But it never really made sense to me. Lincoln had a very different personality, and I don't, to me, the facial features aren't there. But I did ask Atun Ray, and Atun Ray said no, he was not Lincoln, but he was associated with Lincoln. And this kind of association is what I call landmark associations, where people get an intuition. Say, I get the intuition that you're Cleopatra. You know, it wasn't necessarily that you're Cleopatra, but you lived in that era. You may even have known Cleopatra. And that's what happened with the Obama case. He was actually a fairly close associate of Lincoln by the name of Trumbull. And he was incarnate during Lincoln's time, was also a senator from Illinois, worked side by side with Lincoln, and actually wrote the 13th Amendment, which eliminated slavery through the Constitution. And that case is posted on johnadams.net with the picture comparisons.
I got a chill on that one.
Yeah. My gosh.
So if someone comes in as an infant and then they pass away within two or three days, is that just because they didn't come into the right family, or...
The whole topic of why there are infant deaths and SIDS is, I think, a interesting and probably pretty complicated topic. And I haven't really looked into it a lot. I haven't discussed these cases specifically, say, with Atun Ray. But there are times, I think, where the soul may have just changed its mind and said, I don't really want to go through with this. Sometimes it's written that the infant will do that. to teach the parents about grief so those parents can fulfill a mission. For instance, there's a psychologist named Linda Bachman who does past life regressions and between life regressions, who had a child who died in infancy. And she's coming out with a book where she writes that she believes that this was done to teach her and her husband about grief. And Linda eventually became a psychologist, and her experience helped her help her patients. You know, from our point of view, it all seems, God, why would any infant or soul do that? But we're looking at it from the point of view where we're separated from the spiritual world, and we see it as a great tragedy. But for the soul who's eternal, you know, it's not a big deal.
So has reincarnation, the study of reincarnation, helped you and other people appreciate death or not fear death?
Yeah, I mean, there's for me personally, you know, I think when you, in analyzing the whole process and realizing that many times, you know, you come back basically as how you were before, so including your bad traits. And your bad traits are the ones that generate the bad karma that gets you into trouble. So I think it makes you much more consciously try to work on yourself and to refine your negative qualities so that you're kinder to people, that you consciously think, well, you know, I could do this, but it's not going to be good karma, and don't act out like maybe I used to do before. John Adams had a temper, and I have that same predisposition, so that's sort of been something I've been consciously working on. But you look at death in a very different way. You perceive yourself very differently. See, before, I would think of my own identity as being Walter Semkew. I was this guy who was born in a Ukrainian family to these parents. Now I think of myself, I'm my soul. And I am my soul here having this incarnation in this time and place. And so I think of it very differently. And I see that my identity is not really being Ukrainian or being a doctor or so forth. You know, I see myself as a universal soul who happened to incarnate in these circumstances. And that's the whole thing that's going to change humanity. You know, right now, the person who's born Jewish in Israel, that is their identity. I'm a Jew. This is my tradition. I must defend my tradition, and I'm going to be a Jewish, and I'm going to teach my children to be Jewish. And the Muslim is saying the same thing, except he's Muslim. And in the end, the religious identity, the national identity, ethnic identity is what separates us and allows us to hurt each other because we see the other person as separate and different. When you start realizing that reincarnation is how it works, your identity shifts from those circumstances of where you were born to more realizing I'm a universal soul. And when more people start thinking like that, then the whole world's going to be a different place.
Sure. Your book is rather interesting, and what you're entailing to do. And, you know, it does give you that package. Maybe once were to read the one was to read the book, and that you could hop over these, so to speak, crystallized thoughts that we have about who we are, and that, you know, to transfer over everything so that you could become more fluid in your, you know, thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to know that there's a book out there giving some people a little inch maybe into thinking in a different route if they wish to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to be at a conference coming up, right?
Yeah. Boy, am I glad you reminded me. Yeah, we're having a conference in October 3-5, in Los Angeles at Marina Del Rey, at the Marina Del Rey Hotel. It's a beautiful location. And many of the people who are cases in my book will be there in person telling their own stories. Mm. So Barbara Carlin, who we've been discussing as the reincarnation of Anne Frank, she will be there telling her story. Wayne Peterson, a former U.S. diplomat, former director of the Fulbright program will be there. We have three past lives that we're going to review. And then we're also going to have many psychics and clairvoyants who can experience the spiritual world. So that we're saying, well, if reincarnation is real, what is the spiritual world like? And the website for the conference is www.isis.net. So it's isis.net. There's two I's. So iisis.net. And you can get the whole program. We're going to actually have the reincarnation of Laurel and Hardy doing a comedy act. We're going to have the reincarnation of Hans Christian Andersen doing storytelling, and even the reincarnation of Nostradamus.
Well, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yes.
So please make it.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Everybody should go on to our website and read about your website, johnadams.net. So thank you again. I know you have a busy time, and you took out time to be with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the interview and for your interest.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Taz? Hello, Taz?